Welcome to the Tate Talks podcast.
This podcast has been very kindly sponsored by JumpCloud for MSPs. JumpCloud for MSPs provides managed service providers a platform for delivering modern IT services that are identity-centric, cloud-native, and vendor-agnostic.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Tate Talks Season 4. Can you believe it? We've got a fourth series, and we've kicked off in style with a fantastic chat with Ben Spector of Zomentum, where I learnt yet another new phrase. Hope you enjoy. Hi, Ben. Thanks so much for taking the time today to join us on Tate Talks.
Thanks for having me, Chris. It's a pleasure. I've listened to the last few seasons of Tate Talks, and you always have brilliant guests, so I'm honoured to be among the finest of thieves.
Well, I'm sure we are, like everyone else, looking forward to hearing from you. But I guess the first thing to start with is just tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, we all know you from the MSP community, obviously well-traveled in that space, often on the road. But, I mean, tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe something that you don't know, any interesting facts or snippets?
Sure. So I guess I've never really been a part of the MSP community until after I sold my MSP. And I have to keep reminding myself that the community we engage with daily actually probably represents an incredibly small proportion of the overall MSPs out there. You know, I quite often jokingly refer to myself as a recovering MSP, taking sort of language from Alcoholics Anonymous, and therefore existing MSPs would be the sort of still suffering MSPs. And in terms of those still suffering MSPs, you know, the ones that we actually encounter daily probably do represent a really, really small proportion of them. I started my, I wouldn't even call it an MSP. I started my IT business in around 2008, 2009. Around the time I was leaving university. And at that time, it was never really meant to be a business. It was just me doing some independent IT consulting. Was I qualified to do it? Quite frankly, probably not. But you know, sell the dream to clients and they'll pay you for it. So it was doing some IT consulting work, and that always ended up with a bit of a long tail of support questions after the main consulting project was over. And I suspect that's quite a familiar story to a lot of people listening to this. You know, I think a lot of MSPs are accidental business owners. And so I guess the business building journey part of it started when I hired the first part-time technician around probably about 2011 to start taking on some of that long tail of support, which was done on an ad hoc time and materials basis. And then that tail sort of grew and grew. We ended up taking on a small office and then hired a couple more technicians. And eventually in about 2014, 2015, tried hiring first sales director to begin the long, painful pivot from break fix IT, you know, selling time for money, to try and pivot it to a managed services recurring revenue model. I don't think we ever really finished that journey, but at least by the time I sold it in about 2020, it was, you know, generating sustainable revenue to pay the bills.
That's fascinating. And then we'll come back to some of the points you mentioned there, because there's quite a lot to unpack, actually, some really interesting comments. But I mean, my normal next question is, what was your career background pre-MSP? And I think that you're probably unique in the ones that I've spoken to so far, that you kind of jumped straight in, although you probably wasn't referring to it as an MSP. You didn't go kind of down the route of working for someone else, working out you could then do it better and spinning off your own company. You kind of went straight from uni into doing it yourself.
Yeah, and it was, I think, emotionally quite an interesting journey. I've always struggled with mental health and had ups and downs over the years, but I think my decision to go it alone right from the beginning when I left university really came down to a confidence thing. You know, I hadn't done particularly well at university. I hadn't seen that as a great success. School hadn't been brilliant. My grades weren't exactly where my parents would have liked them to be. And so I looked at my CV or lack of CV and thought, who's going to hire me? Like, realistically, what are my options here? Everyone I was at school and university with were applying to these fancy grad schemes at KPMG and Deloitte and doing all sorts of fancy stuff. And I was looking at, you know, what I was interested in and what my skill set was, and just thought, I just don't know what to do. I'm good at IT. I did an electrical electronic engineering degree. Didn't really have any bearing on IT, but it very technically focused. And figured, well, if no one else is going to employ me, I guess I'd better start making some money somehow. So it was a really accidental start to the business that came ultimately out of a total lack of confidence in my own abilities.
Okay, that's it's an interesting route in, but obviously you got there into the MSP space in the end, and you mentioned some of the challenges around the break fix to MSP that a lot of MSPs have been sort of wrangling with, and I think still are. I think, you know, there's this thought that MSP is sort of pure play MSP. I think there's probably still quite a lot of break fix work that's out there, and some providers probably only do break fix and do run successful businesses doing that, whereas a lot of what we all refer to as MSPs are probably still doing a significant amount of break fix as well.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of IT businesses out there that call themselves MSPs, probably through lack of better terminology, but actually don't really deliver managed services on the model that we would recognize at the higher end of the industry that we might recognize as a managed services business. I wear a couple of hats at the moment. I lead solutions teams at Zamentum. So that's every pre-sale solutions, support, success. And basically, if anything's particularly complicated, it ends up on my desk one way or another. But I also work directly with a number of MSPs at varying sizes, kind of mentoring, coaching, helping them on that journey. And I'd say the majority of those clients, you know, it doesn't matter whether they're one or two person companies or some of the 50 to 100 companies I work with, they're all facing the same challenges. They mostly have this pool of generally legacy clients who are on break fix models. There's a bit of a fear of shaking off good revenue, unless and until you can show them that actually they're not necessarily the profitable clients. I think there are a lot of businesses that really haven't managed to shake it off. And I know most of the ones I'm working with, they wouldn't aim to take on any new break fix work. But some will, especially at the smaller end. There's a bit more, I don't know if desperation's the right word, but a more of a willingness to take on whatever clients will come and pay you money. The problem is that just becomes a distraction later on as you then scale the business. You know, I think, again, most people listening to this will probably resonate. When you're a five-person business, you look at the people, the clients you took on board when you were a one-person business and think, dear God, what was I thinking? And then when you get to 10, you look back at the fives and think, oh. And then you get to 20 and you look back at the tens, and yeah, it's always this journey of reflection, looking back at the clients that seemed like big wins at a certain scale that actually then really don't fit where you've grown to, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah.
I think a lot of people definitely struggle with that.
Yeah, no, 100% agree with that. So you mentioned Zamentum there, which is where you are now. I mean, for the people, I think most people will know the name and seen the logo and probably seen you at events around the world or your team at events around the world. But I mean, what does Zamentum, what's the problem Zamentum is solving for MSPs?
Sure. So Zamentum started out about 5 years ago, really as a sales focused platform. I'm sure the CEO there would shoot me for describing it as a sales CRM, but I think in the most simple terms, that's how it started out. It was a sales CRM specifically for MSPs. But over the last couple of years, that's really been growing out towards being a full revenue platform. So it respects the fact that the PSA is the center of the universe for most MSPs, but most of the PSAs don't particularly handle a lot of the revenue processes very well. So obviously Zamentum has that sales CRM element to it, helps with quoting and proposals and managing the overall sales pipeline. But then we've also built on tools that deal with SaaS licensing reconciliation. So ensuring that the PSA is always up to date with the number of licenses that your vendors are billing you, for example. Massive problem. We're just, depending when this goes out, we're either just about to or have just launched a payment solution that integrates with the whole sales CRM, integrates with the PSA, integrates with the accounting, again, to help simplify some of those revenue processes.
Okay, so I guess it's something that MSPs could take a look at if they've got any sort of problems in those areas, or maybe they're not aware they've got problems in those areas, but to take a look to see what you can do to help.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. And I often talk about the reason I ended up at Zamentum, which I think is quite an interesting one. Yeah, after I sold my business in late 2020, I was then consulting with another slightly larger London MSP as sort of interim technical director role. And one of the things that the CEO there had started to realize was that they needed some kind of sales and quoting tool. And so, I'd been using QuoteWorks in my business since about 2015. And so I said, look, I know it very well. It works. We should just implement that. And he said that he'd heard about this other platform on the Tech Tribe that seemed to be spoken of very highly, to which my response was, I don't really have the emotional bandwidth to start exploring new stuff right now. And got a real back in your box, Ben, response from him saying, look, just spend half an hour having a look at Zamentum and let me know what your honest thoughts on it. So I had a demo of the solution and had that real light bulb, bugger me moment of realization of this is what was missing in my MSP. And I think if I'd had it 5 or 10 years ago, my business would have been in a very different place, because the biggest challenge, ultimately the reason I sold the business was because it wasn't growing the way I wanted it to be. It just wasn't making the money I wanted to make. It wasn't growing the way I wanted it to be. And I didn't feel that I had the skills, the knowledge to really take it to a level that I was ever going to be happy with. And ultimately that came down to sales. I had an engineering background. I was very technical. I've often said there are two types of MSP. There are engineer-led MSPs that can't sell. Well, that was me and probably most people listening to this. And then there are sales-led MSPs that can't deliver. And great MSPs managed to bring together both of those skill sets. I tried to bring in sales directors several times. It never really worked out. So I was just always going to be that engineer-led MSP that can't sell. And I guess I saw in Zamentum a real solution to that problem. We can give engineers sales process in a box that they can actually run with and grow their businesses. So I reached out to the CEO and said, this is where I'm at. I'm miserable. I don't know what I'm doing. But I have 10 years of pain and baggage of running a struggling MSP that I think I could bring to your roadmap. And the rest was history.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's fascinating background there. I wanted to just go back to something you mentioned at the start, and I realized that this is probably more for my benefit than people listening, is that you mentioned that, obviously, and I agree, by the way, but with the MSP community that we speak to as part of the community, the people we see at the events and we see listening to this, we know that listen to this podcast, is probably a very, very small fraction of the overall MSP community. I guess the question would be, why do you think that is? And how, are there any ideas how we, because obviously presumably you see the benefit of the community now with hindsight, but when you weren't a part of it with your MSP. How do you think as a community we can reach out and get more of that other 80% to come and join the community that we know?
I think there is a really good question in there. And I think if anyone had the answer, someone would have managed to do it. You've got companies like ConnectWise with their IT Nation events and Datto with their DattoCon events. There are loads of great events out there, the Tech Tribe meetups, but all of those events are consistently the same faces. I describe those other MSPs that aren't part of the community as the dark MSPs or the shadow MSPs. No one really knows who they are, where they are, how many there are, or how to reach them. I definitely don't have an answer to that. I think you know, if I look back to where I was when I was running my MSP, I was one of those dark shadow MSPs. I guess, you know, we had a couple of local competitors, but I think in a way, even describing them as competitors, as we always had done, you know, there was one local to us in Kingston, and I described their MD as my arch nemesis. And I suspect that a lot of these shadow MSPs probably do see the other local businesses as competitors rather than as potential allies, sources of knowledge, or even friends. And I think that's kind of the problem that somehow we need to solve, is reaching these MSPs and explaining that there are more potential clients than all of you together could handle. You know, if you think literally every small business, medium business, large business in the UK or in the US needs an MSP, they need somebody to manage their IT. There may be thousands or hundreds of thousands of MSPs, but there are probably still not enough to actually service every business that needs servicing. So if we kind of get over that competitive element to it and start to see each other more as allies, which those who are in the community definitely do. You know, if you listen to any of the networking talks, IT Nation, I think, are particularly good at hosting their peer groups. You know, if you look at the way these peer groups, who operate in the same geographic areas, offering ultimately the same services, the way they're happy to benchmark with each other and understand what's working and what's not working, rather than just looking at each other as local competitors. I think there's just a really interesting problem to try and unpack there, but I'm definitely not qualified to figure out how to reach them all.
No, but it's intriguing, and you're in a great place that you can probably help on this, because when you were in your dark MSP, this is, I guess, the question that I've got is, it's two-pronged. I mean, were you using MSP tools at the time, like a PSA or an RMM? And so, if so, were you aware that there was a community involved, but just decided not, you didn't think it was worth engaging, or did you not know it existed?
A bit of both, but leaning more towards didn't know it existed. You know, we were quite deeply embedded with the Datto ecosystem, but we didn't really see Datto. You know, we were using Autotask PSA, we were using Datto RMM long before it became a Datto product back in the Centra stage days. We were using their BCDR products. We were using their SaaS backup. You know, we were literally using all of the Datto products, but I didn't really see Datto as a partner. You know, Greg Jones, if he's listening, would probably be absolutely furious, but I just saw them as kind of my money grabbing vendor. They just wanted to hold me to contracts, take money, they were just there to sell me stuff. And I think what therefore happened is when our account manager at Datto reached out trying to suggest that we come to DattoCon, for example, you know, trying to sell the DattoCon conference passes, my response, and I'll have to sanitize this, but my response was essentially, why on earth am I going to pay you $1,000 plus all of the incidental expenses it's going to cost me to get to your event in the US to be sold to for 3 days? You know, where is the value in that? If you want me to come to DattoCon, you'll need to pay me and my expenses and my time to come and be sold to for 3 days. Having now been to those events as, you know, from the other side of the channel, but having been to those events without it costing me anything, you know, because obviously Zamentum take me to those events, but having now been, I see the tremendous value. Actually, that $1,000 Datto we're asking for to get, you know, to come to DattoCon would have been 3 days taken out of being a tech in my own business, networking with peers, learning a lot about Datto's products for sure, all useful knowledge if you're running your business on their products, meeting the other vendors that we were potentially using face to face, joining the networking sessions, hearing the keynotes. Like, there's so much going on at these events that I just didn't know was there. And I don't know whether to blame the Datto account rep's messaging, or, you know, maybe his or her targets were just, you need to sell this many conference passes in this much time, get on with it. Or it was me being completely shut down to the idea that maybe there is value out there. But it's been this, my experience has been the same across all the events, whichever of the big vendor events I go to. And I think seeing it from the other side of the channel, you know, I'm now on the vendor side, I'm speaking to MSP partners and customers of Zamentum, and you know, whether they see it the same way, I don't know, but it's great to meet and spend time with those customers. But I think it's also great for them to meet and spend time with us. Like, where, you know, when I was dealing with Datto, if I had a problem, everyone has problems from time to time, but if I have a problem, I didn't have a Greg Jones. I could just pick up the phone and ring and say, Greg, I've help, please, can you just help sort this out? And I would really hope that any Zamentum partners who are having a problem that have ever met me at an event or, you know, need someone to just pull, you know, pull people's hair and get things fixed, I hope they would just pick up the phone to me and say, Ben, we met at the Super Ops conference a couple of months ago. I'm having this problem with support. We just keep going round and round in circles. Can you help? And so I think those relationship building opportunities with the vendors are also really, really, really important to take advantage of. And I wish I'd had those relationships with influential people at the vendors that I could reach out to when I needed them.
Yeah. And that's something we've both got in common, that we've been on the MSP side and the vendor side, because I don't know whether it's quite as stark as it used to be, but back in the day, we were an Autotask customer, one of the first in the UK. And I went to an Autotask community live event, and that's where I first came across Datto, because they had no presence over here at the time. And then the relationship that we had in our MSP with Datto was transformative for the MSP, and I guess ultimately professionally for me as well. So it's a great place to go and find these new solutions that can really benefit your business, as well as the networking. And the point that you make about building connections with vendors is also really important. If anything does ever go wrong, you've got a kind of a connection that you can go to.
But also not just when it goes wrong, but also when you just need support building the business. Like I think it's very easy to just, you know, wash over vendors as being these big entities of nameless individuals who don't care, who just see us as customers with wallets. Actually, it couldn't be more, you know, it couldn't be further from the truth. Whenever I encounter the Zamentum partners and have an opportunity to genuinely add value to their businesses in some way, I leave those interactions with a massive sense of pleasure and achievement for being able to help them with whatever they needed. And I think I'd love for the customers and partners to see a bit more how much we as vendors do actually care about their success. Yeah, in a way, me describing vendors as just being vendors is doing everyone a disservice. You know, we are a bunch of individuals who are very passionate about what the partners are doing and helping partners on their journeys to success.
Yeah, hear, hear. Totally, totally agree with that. And it is, excuse me, yeah, partner is the right word. I think that it sometimes gets lost that the vendor's success is totally tied to the MSP's success. So it's in everyone's interest for it to be a kind of a win-win. And I kind of totally agree in the partnership side.
And I think, you know, bringing that back to the community element of it, that's where the community is so important, because it does break down those barriers between these big multi-billion dollar nameless, you know, nameless individuals in corporations to real people.
Yeah. And again, it's where kind of learning about new products or different ways of doing things that often came from what in a lot of businesses would be called competitors, but we would probably call sort of different people in the community. We were quite involved in CompTIA early on, and different peer groups and went to different networking events with Autotask or with Enable that we used at the time. And it was a great way to meet different people, talk about problems, because we're all, you know, at the end of the day, all MSPs are pretty much trying to do the same thing. So I guess they're all coming across the same challenges. So just speaking to someone, you know, what do you do about this? How do you solve this? Is sort of invaluable.
Oh, I went through the first 5 years of my business, but it wasn't. I went through my entire business journey feeling like I was the only idiot that couldn't work it out. You know, I was thinking all these successful IT businesses near us, they've all made a success of it. They've all figured it out. They all know what they're doing. I must be the only idiot that can't figure it out. But I suspect actually, A, they were probably having the same challenges, but I wasn't in the same room talking about the same challenges. or they'd overcome those challenges by being in a room with people who'd overcome the challenges. I was just totally isolated, feeling like I didn't know what I was doing because I wasn't getting advice. I wasn't meeting vendors who could support me. I wasn't meeting other MSPs who could support me. It was just a very isolating experience.
Yeah, and that's so thought-provoking, because I'm sure there are lots and lots of MSPs feeling like you were, and there are lots of vendors and communities that want to offer that advice and support, and it's how do we get those two connected? I suppose that's the challenge going forward.
It would be nice to one day see those who are part of the community being a bigger proportion than those who aren't part of the community. Anecdote, you used the number 80%, the dark MSPs. Maybe that's right. Maybe it's more, maybe it's less, who knows? But it would be great to see that balance completely shift the other way, so that the 80% are the ones in the communities and the 20% are the dark ones.
Mm-hmm. I guess we'll know when it's happening, when you start to see different faces turn up at events rather than the same ones. Although the same ones are always great, obviously. Okay, let's move on slightly to... And we may have covered this or not, I'm not sure, but the sort of big challenges that you see MSPs facing as we sort of head into the back half of this year and into 2024, what do you see challenges for MSPs or vendors? I mean, it could be macroeconomic things, or it could be localized things, just any challenges that you've come across.
So I think the biggest challenge people talk to me about the most at the moment has got to be around recruitment and staffing. There seems to be a global shortage of good people to work for businesses generally. And it's definitely one of the things I'm really grateful to not have to be dealing with myself at the moment. You know, I remember the stress of the idea, if one of our senior technicians was starting to throw a bit of a hissy fit about something, I was absolutely terrified of losing the resource, and because I knew the impact that would have on the business. But that was at a time when we as the employers held all of the keys, really, and it was much easier to recruit talent. But most of the MSPs I speak to now are really, really struggling to get good talent, and I think it's quite an interesting one. Like, I hadn't really had much exposure to what employment in the outside world looks like. All of my perception of employment was based on being an employer in a small business. And there are a lot of constraints that come with that. As a small business, it is harder to attract good talent. You know, now that I've been on the employee side of that relationship in a way that I had never been when I was an employer, I see the value that actually the cash compensation element almost invariably isn't the most important part of the overall equation when you're figuring out whether it's the right employer for you. There's so much more that goes into it. But my judgment was completely clouded on that. And I thought, well, we're offering reasonable money. What more could they possibly want? They should be grateful to come and work for us. Anyway, bit of a rant and a ramble about employment. And then I think the other biggest challenge is getting over the hurdle of always the transaction with an MSP's client always being about the price and the terms. I think there's a real difficulty people are facing with differentiating themselves and communicating the value and why clients should work with them. I hear a lot of people finding that it's really coming down to a price and terms conversation. And I think everyone needs to sort of find the right solution to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the employment thing comes up on almost every episode of the podcast. So it's reassuring to know that everyone's consistent, that is obviously is a major problem. And that's internationally, that's not just in the, certainly not just in the UK, which is where we both are, it's international. And I genuinely don't know how that's going to resolve itself, because I don't think it's going to get any easier. And on the differentiation point of view and the pricing and having pricing conversations, it's a strange one, because compared to maybe other professional services like lawyers and accountants and things, probably don't have this conversation around price so much with their clients. It's probably more of a an advisor relationship that they kind of just go on and get a do the work, and they're not having to kind of negotiate. You know, I remember in my MSP, we had customers or clients that had got been with us for years and took all of our services and everything, and then we tried to introduce a new antivirus product that was 2 pence more expensive a year or something, and it would be a full-on conversation about it, and it just seems such a big waste of time.
Yeah, I think I was actually discussing this with someone else this morning around the putting yourself in the buyer's shoes more often when having those discussions. And the story I've used a couple of times, my partner and I bought our apartment a couple of years ago, and we spent the first few months renovating it. And obviously one of the things we needed as part of that renovation process was new curtains and blinds. And we invited in 2 suppliers to come and talk to us about curtains, fascinating subject, I'm sure for some. And they both had a very different approach. One of them started asking questions about whether did I want white or ivory lining on the back of the curtains? Well, Frank, what is the difference? White and ivory help. You know, did I want them lined or interlined? Did we want pencil pleat or double pleat? I don't care. I don't know what any of that stuff means. The other supplier came in and said, these are going to look fabulous. This is what it costs. You know, and that's all I wanted to know. And, you know, putting yourself in the buyer's shoes. Your clients don't understand technology. They don't care to understand technology. They don't want to understand. They're never going to understand. They just want to know that it's going to solve their problems, and they want to know what it costs. But first and foremost, it comes down to, is it going to solve their problems? You know, frankly, when it came to the, this is going to look fabulous and this is how much it costs, by the time the supplier had shown me the solution and shown me how fabulous it was going to look, the cost was entirely secondary. In reality, they came in a couple of $1,000s, about £1,500 over our anticipated budget. But you know, Guy, and my response was, well, we'll find the £1,500. This is what we need. This solves our problem. It doesn't really matter what it costs. We're going to have them for 10 years. And I think MSPs need to put themselves in that buyer's position a bit more. The other great example, buying a car, for example. I changed my car a few weeks ago, and the overall buying process there, car dealers will never give you the price, and you don't negotiate before you've even been into the dealership. The first thing they want is you in that car, holding the steering wheel, feeling the experience, falling in love with the car. Only then do they take you over to the desk and start talking about price and terms. And frankly, by the time I'd fallen in love with the car and decided this is what I want for the next couple of years, this is going to change my life and make me feel better, if the pricing had fallen completely in the wrong direction and the interest rate had been higher than I was expecting and the monthly payment higher than I was expecting, I'm already emotionally committed to it. I've already decided I want this car in my life. And if it costs more than I was expecting, I'll find a way to make it work. And I think, yeah, again, MSP, put yourself in the buyer's shoes. Get that emotional connection going. Get that problem solving. Have the client bought into wanting to work with you long before you even begin to think talking about pricing and terms. When a prospect emails you saying, could you send us a quote for the following services? Absolutely not. No, you need to get on a call, you need to have the meeting, you need to get them bought into why they want to work with you so that you can then be the more expensive solution, but emotionally they already want to work with you.
Yeah, really, really interesting. I like that, especially those sort of analogies around the sort of sitting in the sort of seat of the purchaser or the buyer. So yeah. Yeah, I've got quite a lot of thoughts on that. So that was really interesting. I'll look into that. So outside, a slight change of conversation, change of topic, outside of Zomentum and apartment renovation and curtain picking and new car purchasing, what do you do to relax? I mean, are you a reader, a podcaster, a movie, or a get out in the great outdoors? What do you do to sort of get away?
I really struggle to answer that question. Whenever anyone asks, oh, what are your hobbies? I look at my life and have a real reflection and think, I don't know. I feel like I don't enjoy doing anything in particular. We got a dog recently. I've got, as anyone who suffers my LinkedIn will know and will be very familiar with Pickle, the 11-month-old golden retriever puppy. But that's been really, really transformative. It's helped with mental health massively. You know, being out for an hour twice a day, walking the dog, absolutely brilliant. Couldn't recommend anything more. It's also dealt with the exercise element. I've always been fairly sedentary. You know, I'm not the slimmest person on the planet. And so again, being out for a couple of hours a day, getting my 10 to 15,000 steps, walking the dog's been great. You know, beyond that, really, it's lazy evenings in front of Netflix. Never been a massive reader, although the one book I did read last year, Nigel Moore sent it as a thank you for a referral to someone to the Tech Tribe, I think. Principles by Ray Dalio is a really, really, really good book. Completely shifts sort of perceptions on principles and why. You know, understanding the why to things you do and suggest others do. Podcasts, not so much. Well, I feel like I shouldn't admit it. Yes, I listen to podcasts. No, they are not in any way educational. There's a brilliant podcast, Help I Sexted My Boss, which love listening to a couple of times a week. Otherwise, yeah, nothing educational and classy, I'm afraid.
No, well, which is absolutely fine. There's obviously no right or wrong answer there. And the dog thing's interesting in terms of, you know, you've seen a benefit to mental health. So just, I guess like me, you work for an international company, a Jump Cloud are based in Colorado, which is sort of mountain time, so sort of 8 hours behind us. You work for an international company. I mean, how do you handle, or is it the kind of working across time zones and dealing with that in terms of work-life balance? How do you sort of make that all work?
So I think that there's probably two answers to this. One of them, in a way, is pre-dog. The other is post-dog. Pre-dog, I sit right between the two time zones I work with. My India team are 4.5 or 5.5 hours ahead of me, depending on time of year. My US team are typically 5 hours behind me. So in a worst case scenario, I could wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning to a ton of Slack and email messages from my India team. And I could go to bed at 10 o'clock at night with a ton of messages from my US team. So I think, yeah, I know I have to be very rigid about the times I work. I'm quite careful not to have Slack on my personal mobile, for example. I generally don't even have my Zamentum email on that mobile, because if I did, I know it would be my 5 a.m. and 10 p.m. anchor points at the end of the day. So, you know, I've quite intentionally carved out the times when I work are the times when I'm at my computer. But then, of course, by having a dog, I've got these additional responsibilities during the day. I have to take 10 or 15 minutes from time to time to be present with the dog and ensure his needs are met. But actually, in ensuring his needs are met, it's ensuring that some of my needs are met. And I recognize, you know, if I need to take half an hour out in the middle of the day somewhere to go and take the dog for a walk because we both need it, then I can work a little bit later because I feel I've had that break during the day. So I think before dog, it was very, this is when I start, this is when I finish. And I'm literally unreachable outside of those times, except in an emergency. But post dog, it's been a bit more balanced. Whether that's healthy long-term, I'm yet to decide, but it means I've extended my day slightly in terms of when I start and when I finish, on the recognition that I'm away from my desk for, you know, an hour or so at different points during the day that I wouldn't otherwise have been.
Yeah. And my feeling on that is it's probably much healthier the way that you're doing it now. But obviously because you're getting out and you are switching off for sort of 15 minutes at a time during the day, as you say, to deal with your dog's needs, but that's obviously benefiting you as well. So that seems like you've created a really nice balance there.
So, yeah, I think the best trick actually has been the early afternoon walk, taking Pickle out for 45 minutes, somewhere between about 3 and 4 p.m., I try and keep that bit of the afternoon clear because it is nicely balanced between an early lunch and finishing the day, right in the middle of that afternoon. And I can sort of get out, clear my head, spend some time with the dog, and then go get back to my desk and do another couple of hours.
Awesome. Right. Well, final question, which is the one I ask at the end of every podcast. And you've already given quite a lot of interesting tips and things here. But again, one more, assuming that the majority of people listening are MSPs, not dark MSPs, unfortunately. I don't think we've managed to get any of those to the podcast. But what tip would you give to MSPs to help them with their business going forward?
I think it was a learning that I got because I had never planned to sell my business. When I accidentally started my business and had been running it for several years, I thought it was basically going to be my life. If I'd been smart about it, I would have thought about what the exit plan looks like much earlier. So I'd say, regardless of whether you think a sale is ever going to happen, it's never too early to start preparing your business for sale. I think the biggest mistake in mine was around the length of the contract. And I know this is a controversial topic because you've got some M&A experts saying you don't need long contracts. You've got others that say you do need long contracts. Well, from my experience, the three people eyeing up my business all wanted to know about the contract strength and length. And most of our clients had been in annual automatically renewing contracts, so 12-month contract that automatically renewed every 12 months. If I'd been preparing a little bit earlier, I'd have probably had conversations with clients around trying to get them into 24 and 36-month contracts. Whether it's acknowledged or not, buyers want to be able to see a return on their investment within a couple of years. And if there is no guaranteed return on investment, because during the turbulent purchase sale process, some clients churn, they're not going to see their return. So I think, yeah, the biggest piece of advice is, regardless of whether you're preparing for a sale or not, begin the process of preparing. Make sure you've got nice long contracts that renew on sensible terms. Make sure you've got documented processes within the business and work really hard to make yourself as unimportant as possible to the functioning of that business.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. That's a great tip. And I think, I hope that a lot of MSPs, regardless of where they are in their maturity, whether they're looking to exit or not, can sort of take that on board, because I think that's so important. So, well, we're at time. Thanks so much, Ben, for joining us today. I've really, really enjoyed catching up as ever. And I hope to see you on the road in some point soon. I will put all your contact details in the episode description, so people can reach out to you on LinkedIn or whatever. And also list the books and podcasts that you mentioned if anyone wants to check those out.
Brilliant. Thanks for having me, Chris. It's been a pleasure.
All right. See you later. Cheers. Bye. So that's it for today. Hope you enjoyed the chat with Ben. I know I certainly did. Please like, subscribe, tell your friends, do whatever you can to help promote the podcast. I'd really appreciate it. Until next time, goodbye.
This podcast has been very kindly sponsored by JumpCloud for MSPs. JumpCloud for MSPs provides managed service providers a platform for delivering modern IT services that are identity-centric, cloud-native, and vendor-agnostic. Using JumpCloud's Open Directory platform, MSPs can iteratively replace point solutions by unifying device, identity, and access management. To learn more, please visit jumpcloud.com/MSP or email the team at partners@jumpcloud.com.